Congratulations, Oliver. You've received the National Endowment for the Arts Creative Writing Fellowship. I understand that's quite the big deal. So explain to us what that is, the process of getting it, and maybe a little bit about the competition you were up against.
Thank you so much, Cinta. It is an enormous honor. And the NEA Fellowship is governmental support, essentially a grant for anything that helps make the writing possible. And so in addition to the material support, which I can't say how blessed I feel for that, another element of it that has been a huge gift is just the mandate to figure out what that means for me, what actually will help make the writing possible. I have applied every year since 2014.
Oh,
well,
wow.
Every other year, since they take poetry applications on a kind of alternating basis with prose.
Yeah.
So that means this was my fourth time applying, and I've gotten pretty good at applying and just forgetting about it as one way to, you know, not fixate on the applications that are out there, but just also, you know, go about life. And this year, I think that was even more true in the chaos of the pandemic. Submitting my application back in March was sort of one of the last things that I did before a hectic spring break, break in air quotes, that was, you know, consumed by transforming my spring quarter classes to be taught online.
Yeah.
And so in November, I saw a missed call on my phone from 202, which is Washington, D.C., where I used to live, so I recognized the area code. And I missed the call, but my phone transcribes voicemails. And so looking at the transcription, I saw the phrase, National Endowment for the Arts.
Your heart is beating hard by this time, no?
This is a funny thing. I saw that, and I didn't think, oh, I must have won the fellowship. I saw it and thought, they must need my help with something, a reference for someone else or something about an organization I'm working with. I mean, I didn't think it was about my writing.
I take it those times that you applied before, Oliver, they didn't call you. You just got a letter. Sorry, but no.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
So that call does tell you something.
Yes. And so at that point, I went online and actually I confirmed that I had indeed managed to get my application in back in March. And that was when, you know, my heart started beating, and calling them back, you know, the phone call, it was rather a shock. I had to write down everything that they were saying so that I could remember it later and, you know that it was real. And then I had about 2 months to, you know, absorb the news in private while it was under a pretty strict publicity embargo from the Arts Endowment. So that's a little bit about kind of the process of applying and about finding out about the grant. And I think I'll, you know, maybe leave it there and see what other questions you might have.
What does it mean for you to get this?
It is incredible to me that even at a time like this, you know, we have this governmental support for the arts,
yeah,
that we as a people have decided to do with our tax dollars. Do I think there should be even more? Absolutely. Of course I do. I know so many poets who, you know, who I want to get one.
So, Oliver, I assume that when you applied for the fellowship, you had to submit something of your work so they can see what you do. Is there a poem that you can read to us so that we can get a taste of your work?
Yeah, I will read a poem called Stonewall Sestina that was part of the 10-page writing sample that was the bulk of my application for this grant. And this poem I wrote when I was part of a writing group where we traded work over email that was 100 words of whatever it was that we were working on, and that each new 100 words that we would send had some, in some small way, spun off the previous 100 words that someone else in the group had sent. So for this Sestina, all six words that I chose as the kind of those six repeating words in the Sestina form were taken from the 100 words that fiction writer Andrea Lawler had sent the day before.
Okay.
Stonewall Sestina. Monumental bricks split open, heroic future cast in stone. Pleasure, an angry parade, loving parade. Throw bricks from pleasure to open archives in better future. My future, a parade receding in Bustelo bricks, so open about pleasure. Because pleasure portends future desire, open. After parades, make brick trafficking in representation. In bold pleasure, my brick rubs future clay parades, I'm open. Everyone's opening up in moans. Dogwood parades toward pleasure from future gravestones. Now we've walked in the open and know that pleasure. Everything takes place in between sensations and the future of planets. This queer parade, these blessed stones.
Wonderful. Okay. And that's how you did it. And I understand you were up against 1,600 applicants. Is that about right?
That's what I'm told.
Well, that's pretty good. So now that you have this fellowship and the grant, you know, the money that comes with it, unfortunately taxable, as you said, you're planning what? A trip to Germany, I understand?
I'm still working out exactly what my writing needs right now. And I can say that, you know, this past year of no travel has made it really clear that one place that is important for me to set my feet on myself and lay my own eyes on is the Ronneburg Castle in Germany, which for, you know, over a century housed a group of ancestors on my father's side, which was made up of both of Germans, French Huguenots who had fled France, and some others who were part of a group called the Community of True Inspiration. And after they left Germany, they actually ended up in Iowa, where they were one of the longest lasting communal societies in the United States. But while they were still in Germany, they were persecuted for their religious beliefs and practices, which were centered around the idea that the divine still speaks through people who were instruments. And they were sort of constantly at odds with German authorities. There was book burnings and, you know, mobs chasing them out of town. And so they found their way to the Ronneburg Castle, where they lived alongside other groups who similarly sought refuge there from, you know, sort of the long arm of the state. And in my current poems, I'm interested in the ways that we offer shelter, refuge, protection to one another, the ways we find shelter in one another. And so that has sort of emerged just over the last year as even more of a sort of bucket list item that also has to do with, you know, what I'm writing right now. So I would love to do that when travel becomes possible again. I also, like many Americans, I'm still paying for my pass. For me, it's credit card debt remaining from graduate school. And so it's appealing to think about ways that the grant could help me shift, you know, that relationship, a sort of who or what I'm indebted to, and be able to think about that a little bit differently and, you know, open up that in terms of my poetry. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
You have to voice the dream for it to come true,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Are you given a certain time period? Is there an expiration date on when you have to do something with this fellowship?
The grant period for me, I think, goes to the middle of next year, of 2022.
Surely we'll be all vaccinated by then.
I hope so.
And we can travel again.
And within a few months after that, there's a brief sort of reporting requirement of how things have been going.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. At some point, do you have to report back to the NEA and say, here's how I used my fellowship?
Yes, that's my understanding. Yeah.
Do you have to turn in a piece of work or simply a report of here's what I did?
No, it's more the kind of descriptive reports of, you know, what you've been working on with your writing and ways that the grant has supported that. And if I'm remembering correctly, I think they said they appreciate, you know, seeing work itself that comes out of it, but it's not a specific requirement that be documented.
The plan, or is that going too far ahead? Would it show itself in prose, in poetry? What would you do with the experience of going there and kind of following in your father's footsteps?
That's a great question. Poetry, for sure. I mean, specifically with these sort of poems that I'm working on now that I was describing. But I think the hope or the imagination is that there may be ways that it plays out, you know, certainly across genres that I can't know about yet. I'm working on a prose project that is in an incubation stage that is not even really lends itself to description yet, but I'm excited about it. And I think that this would offer a lot of crossover and context for me on that project, as well as just inspiration. So
meanwhile, while you're not earning fellowships and awards, you're working at K College, as you mentioned before, since 2018. Talk about your work there and perhaps even the challenges of teaching during a pandemic.
Wow. Yeah. So I teach, as you said, at Kalamazoo College, and this is my third year of teaching there, although when I say that, it's hard to believe because I think, as perhaps you are also feeling, this past year alone has just felt so long.
Yeah.
And, you know, I haven't been in a physical campus classroom since, yeah, the beginning of March. And so it's been exciting to figure out how to recreate, you know, the liveliness and feel of a writing workshop online. And I think I have figured some things out about that. The students also are incredible. And so they have really, you know, stepped into co-creating that with me. And it has been, you know, a gift during this time with all of the distress and upheaval to be able to talk about poetry with them. So I've been really grateful for that. And I know that the students are facing all kinds of things with uncertainty of graduating into this particular moment and losses in their families and just the economic situations that, you know, that are happening now. And so it's hard to feel to be apart from them. And at the same time, I think we figured out a way to be together in spite of all of that.
And along with the NEA, you've also earned some other grants and fellowships along the way. I understand you had a recent faculty research grant from the Arcus Center for Social Justice Leadership. Tell us about that.
I was able, with the support of that Arcus grant, to travel to New Orleans for the New Orleans Poetry Festival. And that was not only my first time going to that festival, which I had heard great things about, but also my first time in New Orleans, period. And it was really meaningful to have that support to attend and be able to accept the invitation to be a featured reader on the opening night of the festival. And I also participated on a couple of panels down there and kind of centering a lot around eco-poetry and eco-poetics. And I wrote up a blog post kind of going more into that for the Arcus blog after I got back, kind of recapping what that experience was about and also putting together a kind of a reading list that was my takeaways from the festival for as a way for others to get a little bit of a taste of you know, what was happening down there and the work that was being shared. So I would love to go back to the New Orleans Poetry Festival someday. It was a terrific experience, and it was awesome to have the support.
So what is eco-poetics?
Eco-poetics, I think of as a sort of update to nature poetry, is perhaps one way of putting it, that has as one of its sort of central questions, you know, how do humans fit into the natural environment? What is our impact on it? Also, and has, you know, brings a kind of the same, I think, praise and description and enthusiasm that you might think of when you hear nature poetry, but also brings, you know, questions of climate change and habitat and a bit more explicitly into the work as well. There's a lot of really vital and exciting work happening right now under the umbrella term of ecopoetics. And that's been a fruitful sort of home for some of my work as well.
And then we're going to toss in yet another award, Early Career Achievement Award from the Publishing Triangle. And what is that about? You've got a long list here, Oliver.
The Publishing Triangle is just a terrific organization that supports all things LGBTQ literature. This award is for it, even though I received it shortly after my second book came out, it's not one of their awards that's sort of specific to a book. And so that application was more about the totality of what I have written so far and also my goals and hopes for future work that will continue to contribute to LGBTQ literature. So that one is a very special recognition for me. And also, you know, I take seriously the part about it that it is not just about what I have accomplished so far, but also promise for the future. And I do think of that as a kind of promise, or about what I mentioned earlier with debt, you know, who or what I'm indebted to. I feel very indebted in a really generative way to LGBTQ writers who have paved the way for me and who continue to mentor me. And so I'm excited to be, you know, recognized by that community and to keep through my mentoring and teaching as well as my writing to keep giving that back.
And then I have to ask, because we're both chicken owners, you have some chickens running around in your yard over there near the campus of K College. So do they inspire you? Do they soothe you? Tell me a little bit about those chickens.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so my pandemic pod, so to speak, it's me and my partner and two rabbits and these eight chickens. And it's hard to believe that, you know, the day old chicks that came home last spring in the early weeks of the pandemic are now fully grown. And the eggs, while the egg laying has slowed down a little bit over winter, they are the best eggs that I have ever had.
Oh, I can vouch for that. You cannot go back to store-bought.
Yeah. Right. So, it's been a lot of fun having them around. And they're definitely making their way into newer poems as well. Yeah, it's been, you know, chickens are great. And so many people used to have backyard chickens. That's been a fun thing to learn more about. You know, they seem maybe sort of trendy or anomalous now, but that has been really, you know, somewhat recent.
They're addictive, I think, you know, in a stressful world, and probably more so with COVID going on. There's something about them that's soothing and very normal.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for stopping by to talk a little bit about your award. Congratulations again. And I may just bring you back afterwards to hear the story of that castle in Germany and what you found.
Sounds good. Always a pleasure, Zinta. Thank you so much.